Next case for argument is Gotham versus Ashcroft, Ms. Reyes.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Rebecca Reyes, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Mr. Gotem. Because Congress did not define it in the statute, this court interprets the phrase sexual abuse of a minor under INA Section 101A43A by assigning it its ordinary and contemporary meaning. The statute at issue today falls without that meaning.
Of course, offense would seem to fall within the Federal Criminal Code Section 3509A's definition of what constitutes the sexual abuse of a minor. In essence, he attempted to induce or entice a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct. So why isn't that sort of the end of the matter here?
The definition in 18 U.S.C. Section 3509 has never been formally adopted, actually, by any court. In Rodriguez...
Actually, it was adopted by this court in Espinoza-Franco against Ashcroft.
It was recognized...
Which was decided only 15 days ago, I believe.
It was December 15th, I believe, Your Honor. In that case, this court explicitly held that the Seventh Circuit was not adopting a formal definition of sexual abuse of a minor.
Yes, we suggested that 3509 was not necessarily the limit. But here you're trying to make the opposite argument, that there is conduct explicitly covered in 3509, which is nonetheless not sexual abuse of a minor. And I don't think that was the question reserved in Espinoza-Franco.
Well, Espinoza did not rely on the expanse of 3509 to determine that felony sexual abuse, which included behavior of the fondling of his daughter, to determine that the statute at issue there was, in fact, sexual abuse of a minor. The enticement language of 3509 was not required to find that that statute was included in Section 101A43A. To define sexual abuse of a minor, to define sexual abuse, there has to be sexual behavior that is not abusive. Congress used the term abuse for a reason. It didn't define it in the statute. All we know is where it put the term in the statute and the exact words that it used. If it meant that any sexual behavior at all with a minor was by definition abusive, it could have used a term not abuse and much more benign. It didn't. It used the word abuse. And then, so therefore, it is up to this court to determine by assigning its ordinary and contemporary meaning what actually falls within the term sexual abuse. In Rodriguez, when 3509 was articulated by the BIA made clear that it wasn't adopting 3509, it was using it as a guide. And until this case, 3509 has been a competent guide in that.
Well, 3509, this is about videotaping and privacy. So what I understand 3509A to be saying is that for purposes of this section, that is, for purposes of this videotaping stuff, that's the meaning of sexual abuse. In other words, this videotaping if this had been a federal prosecution for this misdemeanor, then the 17, whoever she was, she would have been entitled to the protection of this statute. That's what you're saying.
3509 serves as a social welfare.
So for purposes of the video statute, sexual abuse is broadly defined. You're saying for purposes of the immigration statute, it doesn't necessarily have to be defined.
Exactly, Your Honor. There is no cross-reference in 101A43A to Section 3509. It is not required.
How much do we know? We know about the cigarettes. Now, did the girl accept the offer?
Not as far as I know, no. There was no sexual contact,
now,
or else he would have been prosecuted for something
else. Do we know her age, or do we just know
that... We just know that she's under 18.
But we don't know her age?
That's right. It is not in the record in the immigration proceeding what her age explicitly was.
I mean, it seems odd you'd have the cigarettes. You'd have the cigarettes there, but not the age.
It does seem to have randomly selected.
Well, are you asking
details.
Us to assume the sort of the best for him, you know, which is that she's 17? Is that how you want us to think about the case?
Well, I think that would be very dangerous territory.
Because if she's 3, you know, it's different. I don't guess you don't offer cigarettes to a 3-year-old, but
I'm not sure that you offer much to a 3-year-old that's unaccompanied into a store that sells cigarettes. But what I am asking this court to determine is that sexual abuse does not include crimes which only implicate words that do not include a threat of...
But you agree it would be a different case, that your case would clearly weaken as the child gets younger, right?
Well, for the purposes of the statute, it only says a minor, and I think that it would be dangerous for this court to go into varying degrees of harm.
I'm interested in the approach, and what I'm saying is, if we have a minor and we don't know her age, for purposes of... Well, let me ask you this. Could the Immigration Service have discovered her age?
Could the immigration judge have considered her age? I imagine the immigration judge could have discovered
what her age was.
Well, the immigration judge was only permitted...
some secret?
I'm certainly not privy to any secrets, but the immigration judge was permitted to look behind the statute to determine under Taylor whether she was a minor.
So
that was the extent of
behind,
the inquiry.
But looking behind, could he find out her age?
It was not in the criminal documents that he consulted. What was in the criminal documents, which I believe was the indictment, was that she was a minor.
Okay, because her age wouldn't be an element of the offense. Although,
correct.
Why the cigarettes? Well, what was the...
A minor wasn't even an element of the offense. That's why the immigration judge had to go behind
the
statute.
But the indictment or whatever information said she was a minor?
It did.
But could he have, under the rules of the Immigration Service about, you know, what's admissible and so on, or what the duties of an immigration judge are, could he have made an inquiry of the state to find out the age of the victim?
Under Lahiri's of this court, he was entitled to go as far as he needed to into the criminal record to determine whether she was a minor, because the elements of the statute do not require that finding. And so to determine whether it was sexual abuse of a minor under the immigration statute, he was entitled to dig as deep as he needed to determine whether she was a minor. And what he consulted was that it just said that she was a minor. And what I would like this court to find is that this statute, albeit has includes and indicts sexual behavior, is not sexual abuse, not because it didn't require a touching. I concede that sexual abuse does not require a touching. But there was no threat, there was no force, and it was an offer. If the state's prosecutor had decided...
No, and no exhibition, right. No,
that's true as well.
That's a non-touching element. It's important.
I would like to...
Do we know how many cigarettes he offered?
I don't. Though that would be an interesting detail in terms of the immigration part of
it's
this case. It would have been
curious.
Immaterial, yeah.
Let me just note that the immigration judge in his opinion said that the act involved a juvenile under 17 years of age.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that
sorry,
out, Your
what,
Honor.
What did you say?
Under 17 years.
Under 17?
I would like to reserve the remainder of my time, if I may.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Marsteller?
May it please the Court. Eric Marsteller for the United States. This case involves a native and citizen of India who is ordered removed.
So do we know how old the girl was?
The record doesn't appear to say. It just says that she was under 17.
She's under 17.
Under 17.
But that's not material for the statute and so on.
Well, all that the immigration judge needed to know was that it was a sexual assault of a minor. And so once he determined that it was a minor.
Sexual assault? I don't see that.
Sexual abuse.
I'm sorry, sexual abuse. Excuse me.
Go ahead. I'm going a little different way here. But on the question of the continuance, mm-hmm. can the government simply sit on the alien's I-130 indefinitely, as the record suggests it might?
Well, I think, first off, I don't think the continuance issue need be addressed unless this court finds that there was no aggravated felony. So assuming this court finds that there was no aggravated felony, then the court would have jurisdiction to determine the continuance. Initially, I feel the issue should be remanded because if the issue is remanded, the petitioner would have another opportunity to raise the continuance with the court. If the court decides that the issue should not be remanded, then all that's required under Matter of Garcia is that the immigration judge use his discretion to determine whether or not to grant a continuance.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to sleep thinking about this, so you have to help me out here. Because, I mean, I'm also wondering if the government didn't adjudicate his I-130, whether he'd lose the ability to seek a writ of mandamus if and when he is deported. I mean, I'm really trying to figure out continuance business, because
I believe that
this is yet a new armament. And
I believe that the trial attorney obviously does not have the discretion to say that the matter will not be decided. And I believe in the transcript of the proceeding, the DHS attorney says that it was his belief, but he was not representing the agency opinion. That it would not be adjudicated, or that it might be slow in it getting adjudicated, or that it likely would not pass the I-130, would not be approved. And it was reasonable for the immigration judge to, facing the prospect of a long delay before the I-130 was adjudicated, to deny the continuance. I think that's the issue before the court, is whether or not the IJ would have had the discretion.
Well, I'm wondering whether or not he really was, you know, whether Judge Zerbe was really exercising his discretion in denying the request for continuance, or was he saying that he was without the power to grant a continuance? Because the IJ is quoted as saying, "I can't. And I don't have an option."
I believe.
See, it just. What I don't understand is, it just seems so odd to me that the government can simply announce, we're just not going to address his application for continuance, and then the immigration judge says, "Well, I can't, and I don't, and I don't have the option."
Well, I believe that the government would eventually have to, I believe, adjudicate the I-130. But I also think that the immigration judge may have been referring to guidance from the chief immigration judge regarding the amount of time before proceedings should be completed. And so I think that was a factor. Not that it would have been impossible for him to grant a continuance based on the lack of adjudication, but because he didn't want to wait for what could be an extended period of time for that adjudication to be completed. And I believe that's the discretion he used in denying the continuance.
Look, on this question of sexual abuse, I don't quite understand how an Illinois misdemeanor gets translated into an aggravated felony. That seems a pretty big jump. What's the sense of that?
Well, this court has previously found that
I know, but what's the sense of it? What's the sense of saying Illinois says it's a misdemeanor, and we say, or the Immigration Service says, it's an aggravated felony? Now, where'd they get that idea from?
Well, an aggravated felony, as defined in the statute, is not a felony because the term aggravated felony is specifically defined.
Oh, great. That's a good start. Felony is not a felony. But my point is, you have what the statute says is murder, murder, rape, and sexual abuse of a minor. And sexual abuse of a minor is undefined. So we look around, and why wouldn't the fact that Illinois is, you know, it's not Nevada, it's not Thailand or something like that, it's a respectable state, and it says this is a misdemeanor. So why does the Immigration Service promote it to an aggravated felony?
Well, I believe that's a decision of Congress.
This is not a decision of Congress.
Well, with,
Congress didn't define sexual abuse of a minor.
But they did define aggravated felony. And
yeah, they defined murder, rape, and sexual abuse. And there are a bunch of other things. But we're just looking at murder, rape, and sexual abuse of a minor. So body of thought or social science or philosophy or common sense or what did the Immigration Service decide, well, Illinois says it's a misdemeanor, we say it's an aggravated felony?
Well, I believe in this case the immigration judge was following the court's guidance in Guerrero-Perez.
I thought the Board of Immigration Appeals did this, but doesn't it have to do with the penalty? What is the maximum penalty for this crime that Illinois describes as a misdemeanor?
I believe he was sentenced to 6 months. I'm not sure what the maximum is.
Yeah, I thought it was something
six
like
months
that.
Probation.
That is a federal practice, a sentence of 6 months or more is deemed a felony sentence no matter what label the state applies. I thought it was something like that, but I may be wrong.
I believe the law is different regarding crimes involving moral turpitude and aggravated felonies. With crimes involving moral turpitude, you take the sentence into account, and cumulative sentences of two or more convictions over a certain time, that it makes a person inadmissible. This case is an aggravated felony, so there is no time.
Okay, but explain in common sense terms, where does the Immigration Service get, what thinking process leads it to promote this misdemeanor, this offer of cigarettes to a girl who might have been, 16, that becomes something on is kind of on a par with murder and rape, right? Murder, rape, sexual abuse of a minor, obviously a serious crime. It's number one in the list of aggravated felonies. So what is it that gets you to promote this, which some would regard as extremely minor offense? How do you get that, promoted up there with rape and murder?
Well, I believe that sexual abuse of a minor should be interpreted broadly because it was...
Why?
Because it's... the definition of aggravated felony...
You're not going to get anywhere with definitions.
No.
Yeah. So now
besides, we're not asking you to testify about your beliefs. This is a question about the board's reasoning. If you don't know what the board's reasoning is, why don't you just file a supplemental memorandum explaining the board's reasoning? Because it's not a question about your thinking.
Right. I will file such a memorandum, Your Honor.
Well, no. I mean, it's only two pages long. I mean, surely you have some. Now, what I find very surprising in the board's opinion, I'm not sure they understood that there was no actual sexual activity. I mean, maybe they're just, illiterate. But what they say is persuading or inducing a child to engage in sexually explicit conduct involves sexual abuse of a minor. Fine. But that sounds as if they think that she was actually persuaded or induced to engage in sexually explicit conduct, not that she was made an offer that she refused. Those are very different crimes, aren't they?
They would be, Your Honor, but I see your reading, and I believe that the board should be presumed to know what it's doing.
Well, if they know what they're doing, why didn't they give some reason why they thought that just the offer of the cigarettes constituted constituted sexual abuse of a minor. Because they have a quotation from a case which has rape, molestation, you know, incest, so on, prostitution. They don't discuss this offense. They don't say in 2004, you know, moral standards of the United States are that if you offer a minor money or the equivalent for oral sex, that's an extremely serious crime, although classified only as a misdemeanor by Illinois. Now, shouldn't they say something about, you know, contemporary moral standards?
I believe, Your Honor, I notice I'm out of time, so may I ask to finish your question? I believe, Your Honor, in the matter of Rodriguez, the board did give a more lengthy explanation, noting that it followed the advice of Section 3509 because it was a useful...
Well, that, of course, is a clear fallacy, using the definition 3509, because that's for the purpose of protecting child witnesses. So Congress could think, look, this girl, you know, this girl, if she had testified, should have had the privilege of, you know, videotaping or something to protect her privacy. So that's fine. But that's not the same thing as whether you deport a person because he's engaged in a very serious criminal activity. Right? There's just two different things.
I believe it was proper to use that definition because...
No, it isn't. It's not, because it's apples and oranges. It's one is protecting the child witness because she's a child, not because she's necessarily the victim of a heinous crime, but because she's being dragged into court. And we don't like, and we understand, it may be worse to drag the child into court than it is than the actual offense, which was just a misdemeanor. So where is some reasoning process which says, you know, we understand, you know, it's the 21st century variety of sexual mores in the United States, extremely high levels of teenage sexual activity in the United States, extremely high. I mean, so does what do you think is the percentage of American girls who've had sexual activity, not merely received offers, but actually engaged in sexual activity as a teenager? It's high, low?
I wouldn't know the exact. I would think it's...
Well, you think that's relevant? You think would it be relevant for the board to inquire into what actual sexual practices are?
Well, I think the issue, Your Honor, is whether or not...
Well, would it be or wouldn't it be? Shouldn't the board find out something about sexual behavior before it decides that this offer for oral sex is sexual abuse?
I don't think that's necessary, Your Honor.
But where does it get it? Does it get it out of its brains or what?
I think it's just it interprets the statute.
No, it doesn't interpret the statute.
It relies on its decision in Rodriguez.
No, we're not Rodriguez. That's a different case. That's a different case, and it rests, again, instead of thinking about the problem, what are the serious sexual crimes, it goes to an inapplicable statute.
Well, I believe it goes to a statute in that it's trying to...
Where's the thinking process about what constitutes a serious sexual crime?
I'm not certain, Your Honor.
Now, you said in your brief, you had something.
While Judge Posner finds that, I'm just going to add that Mr. Gatton was sentenced to probation, no jail time at all.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Do we know whether this girl was a prostitute?
We do not. We know that it appears that the complaint...
Would that make a difference for you? Now, you say such a disgusting and depraved proposal may also cause the victim to have negative thoughts about sexuality and produce psychological injury that may be difficult to overcome. Well, what's that based on? Is that what the board said? Is that your own idea?
The board did not mention that. I believe some other courts of appeals have mentioned that in their decisions and their interpretations of the statute.
And you say that constitutes the forcing of unwanted sexual activity upon the child.
That's
applying. But of course, there was no forcing here, was there?
Well, it depends. I mean,
depends.
If you're a minor and an adult,
forcing of unwanted sexual activity.
If you're a minor and an adult offers you cigarettes in exchange for oral sex, you might interpret that as being forced to deal with the sexual activity issue.
Okay. Is there anything more you'd like to say, Mr. Barstella?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Reyes.
Your Honor, I'd just like to answer the question about the I-130. The government is not entitled to sit on it indefinitely, and the adjudication of the I-130 would have been completely distinct from whether he has been convicted of an aggravated felony or not. That is an adjustment of status question, not whether he can be recognized as an immediate relative.
No, I understand all of that. What worries me is the possibility that, the government can simply sit on this, and that's...
Well, he does have available to him the complaint for the writ of mandamus, which would get the federal court involved in terms of making the government perform its duty of adjudicating these kinds of petitions. And his wife could also bring that writ because the I-130 was filed by her on her husband's behalf.
Yeah, but what if he's already deported?
Well, if he's deported as an aggravated felon, regardless of whether the I-130 is approved or not, he has a permanent bar against reentering this country as a legal permanent resident. The only other point that I would like to make to the court is if you look at 720 ILCS 511-6, you will find the Illinois statute of indecent solicitation of a child, which implicates criminal behavior that is much closer to a sexual abuse, a reasonable sexual abuse definition, than mere solicitation of a sexual act.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Reyes and Mr. Marsteller. In our last case,